Good afternoon, everybody. This is Chair Andrew Carlson, Chair of the Property and Local Tax Division. I'm going to call this meeting to order. The first order of business is that we need a roll call to determine who is present. Will the clerk please take the roll?
Representative Carlson?
Present.
Representative Vang? Representative Vang?
Present.
Present. Representative Hertoff? Representative Hertoff? Representative Bernardi? Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Drazkowski? Representative Gomez? Representative Gomez?
Present.
Representative Herr? Representative Herr?
You might want to remind people to do star star. So for members on the call, to unmute yourself, you want to hit star star.
Representative Hewitt?
Here.
Representative Marquardt?
Present.
Representative McDonald? Representative McDonald? Representative Petersburg? Representative Petersburg? What? Representative Runbeck?
Present.
Representative Zhang? Representative Zhang?
If we want to maybe just ask one more time for the members that, to see if they got on the line. That, yeah, go ahead, Ellen, sorry.
Representative Hertoff? Representative Drazkowski. Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative McDonald. Representative Petersburg?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Here.
Did you get me? McDonald here.
Okay.
Representative Zhang?
Okay. Thank you. It looks like we do have a quorum. So there's a quorum present, and I'll move approval of the minutes for March 11th, 2020. Any discussion on the minutes from March 11th?
Mute off.
I don't have any.
Good. Hearing none. All
those
in favor.
Oh, my God.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Okay. Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Okay. We're making progress here, folks. We're going to keep going.
You have been muted. To unmute yourself, press the star key twice.
Okay, we're on to our first bill. The first bill we have for consideration is House File 3826 from Representative Eklund. Representative Marquardt is going to move House File 3826 to be laid over. There is an author's amendment labeled DE1. Representative Marquardt moves the DE1 amendment. Let's pause here for a second. Mr. Swanson, if you could briefly explain the amendment and how it differs from the original bill for us, please.
Mr. Chair and members, this is Jared Swanson with House Research. So the H3826DE1 amendment would change the 4B1 property tax classification definition. This change would now include property rented as a short-term rental property for more than 14 days in the preceding year. The language would also define short-term rental property as residential real estate rented for periods of 30 consecutive days or less. So under the DE1 amendment, short-term rental properties would be classified as 4B1 for property tax purposes. They would have a class rate of 1.25%. They would not be subject to the state general levy and would be subject to referendum market value taxes. The primary differences between the bill as introduced and the DE1 is really just in what types of property qualify for this tax treatment. So under the original bill language, a new property tax classification would be created for short-term rental properties. And it would receive the same class rate, same treatment under the state general levy and for referendum market value taxes as the DE1 language. But under the original language of the bill, any property that was rented or advertised as a short-term rental property would qualify for this new classification, whereas under the DE1 amendment, a property would have to be rented for 14 days or more in order to qualify the 4B1 property tax. In order to qualify for the 4B1 property tax classification. Mr. Chair, that concludes the overview of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Appreciate the explanation. Okay, any questions on the DE1 amendment? We will need to roll call this. So any questions before we take a roll on this? Okay, seeing none, if we can please take the roll on the DE1 amendment, please.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Vang?
Yes.
Representative Hertoff? Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt. Representative Marquardt.
Aye.
Representative McDonald.
Aye.
Representative Petersburg.
Aye.
Representative Runbeck.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Okay, great. With that, the amendment is adopted. We have the bill before us. Representative Eklund, I believe you're on the line with us. If you want to just provide a brief overview of your bill, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and colleagues. Thanks for hearing this bill. As all of you know, sometimes we need to step in to provide clarity on property tax issues when our county assessors, and the Department of Revenue are unable to uniformly address a unique situation in our property tax code. Last year, the Minnesota Department of Revenue advised county assessors across the state that there were multiple ways for them to classify family cabins and condos that are sometimes used as short-term rentals. Not surprisingly, county assessors followed the advice and found multiple ways to tax similar properties. In fact, some counties are taxing these family cabin vacation homes as full-time businesses, and in many cases, this more than doubles the tax rate of individual vacation property owners at a time when COVID-19 is devastating the state's tourism industry. I recently introduced House File 3826 because cabins and condos used for short-term rentals should be governed by one classification statewide, and that classification should balance the basic fairness of how we tax property with the tremendous benefits that come with encouraging more tourism within the state. No county in Minnesota depends on tourism more than Cook County, where more than 70% of all rentals are short-term. I appreciate the hard work the committee on this issue has put in on this issue. One area that remains to be resolved is the effective date. As you move forward, we hope we can work through this issue with you in the department and hope that the effective date on line 8.3 delete all amendment can be moved back to 2020. Otherwise, these properties will be moved to commercial class before they receive the benefit from the provisions in this bill. I believe that is unintended consequences that we will need to yet resolve. Jim Boyd of the Cook County Chamber of Commerce is here with us today to provide additional background information on why this bill is so important. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Boyd, when you're ready, if you could proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Eklund and Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Boyd, and I'm the Executive Director of the Cook County Chamber of Commerce in Cook County. As most of you know, tourism is our economy, and we have worked very hard over the past several decades to make it a year-round operation that can support full-time, strong-wage jobs for our residents. It's a constant struggle. The impact of COVID-19 on Minnesota's tourism cannot be exaggerated. It's on the verge of collapse. Deed Commissioner Steve Grove keeps saying that 82% of Minnesota is still working. For Cook County, it is more accurate to say that 82% of the county is not working. We have already lost more than 30% of our jobs. Tourism can't happen if people are unable to move around. Please consider this property tax issue in that context. This is not a theoretical exercise for us. When the Cook County Assessor and his staff first raised this issue in 2018, it was pretty obvious that the tax classification for short-term rentals needed to change. Cabins and homes offered for short-term rents clearly no longer fit in their traditional seasonal recreational tax class. They were income-producing, and they should be paying a higher property tax. But care was needed. These properties account for almost half the available lodging in Cook County. We wanted to be certain the new tax was not so high it would drive individual cabin owners to pull their properties from the rental market. We also wanted to ensure that the new tax class not impose artificial limits on the length of the rental season. We wanted a solution that was as simple as possible, that would be a good fit statewide, and that would minimize the workload imposed on county assessors. No annual surveys. Working with our county board and county assessor, we tried a bunch of options. We concluded the most reasonable classification for these properties was something similar to residential non-homestead, and that is precisely what House File 3826 would accomplish. It was a plus from our point of view that it would bring these properties back on the tax roll for local operating levies, similar to other 4B properties, thus helping reduce the burden borne by other Cook County property owners. However, it is also critical that the effective date in this bill be changed from assessment year 2021 to assessment year 2020. Otherwise, this bill would move many of these properties into the commercial class for 1 year, with tax burdens up to three times higher. And that 1 year is, as it turns out, our COVID year. We recognize changing the date means extra work for assessors, but note that assessors collectively appear to be okay with this change. We believe this proposal offers a fair compromise that reflects the typical residential and commercial aspects of these properties that avoids doing significant damage to our economy, that creates consistency and clarity across Minnesota, and that imposes a minimal burden on county assessors. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. We appreciate your testimony. Members, if you have questions for Mr. Boyd, please text Nathan. Again, I'll give out his phone number. He'll put you in a queue for questions. And again, Nathan's number is 479-651-5416. I'll repeat, 479-651-5416. So if you have a question, text Nathan. He'll put you on the queue. I'll give it just a minute here before we move on to our next testifier. Our next testifier is Mr. Edgar. And I believe Paul is on the line with us as well. Why don't we go ahead? So I'm not seeing anybody in line for questions at this time. So, Mr. Edgar, if you want to please proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Paul Egger, and I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Mr. Chair, I'll just pause for a second, make sure you all can hear me. Is that correct?
I can hear you just fine, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Representative Eklund's House File 3826. I also want to thank Representative Eklund for taking the time to meet with me earlier in the session about both his bill and this issue generally. Mr. Chair, in response to the guidance that Mr. Boyd and Representative Eklund mentioned, it was issued by the Department of Revenue last May, all county assessors have to determine how to implement the guidance. The legislature does not act on this issue, many property owners around the state will see a significant increase in their property taxes, and there will be a county-by-county patchwork of methods for determining primary use for those properties that have been rented on a short-term basis. We think it's important that the legislature take action this session. However, we do have some concerns with specific aspects of Representative Eklund's House File 3826. Our members think the 14-day threshold in the bill is too low and are concerned that it could result in a lot of properties being reclassified to 4B, even though the primary use of the property is residential homestead or seasonal recreational. We think more discussion needs to take place regarding what an appropriate threshold number would be, and we're happy to work with Representative Eklund and other stakeholders throughout the session to make sure that we arrive at the right number. Mr. Chair, we are also concerned that although most people probably think of cabins or condos and resort areas with respect to short-term rentals, our reading of this bill is that it would also apply to homestead property, where it is the owner's residence and they offer a room or the entire property for rent on a short-term basis during the year. We do not think any homestead property where it is the owner's only property and residence should be subject to reclassification. Even the Department of Revenue's guidance states, quote, do not change the classification of homestead property if short-term rental occurs and the property remains the owner's slash relative's primary place of residence. I also just would like to mention the effective date issue. Both Representative Eklund and Mr. Boyd mentioned we think that continues to be a problem, and we would concur with their assessment that the effective date of any legislation moving forward really does need to be 2020 so that the guidance issued by the Department of Revenue isn't implemented for a year and then moving on to another approach. And finally, Mr. Chair, I just want to echo what I said earlier. We look forward to working with the bill author, you, Mr. Chair, members of this committee, the legislature generally, the Department of Revenue, and all interested stakeholders throughout the remaining weeks of session on this issue. It's complicated, and there are a lot of, I think, aspects of this that we need to develop a better understanding of how it would work and who would be impacted moving forward. And with that, I would just like to again thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you, Mr. Egger. I appreciate your testimony today. I do see we have some members with questions. First on my list is Representative Runbeck. Representative Runbeck, if you would specify who you want to direct your question to, that would be very much appreciated.
Sure. This is for Mr. Egger. So your comment that the 14-day rental period is too short. What do you have suggestion on that, a better number? And then secondly, can you just remind us of the difference in the property tax rate between the residential home, or no, the seasonal recreational, and what this is being proposed to be?
Mr. Egger.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, and can you hear me?
We can.
Yep.
Okay, great. Representative Runbeck, to your first question, what is the appropriate number? No, we don't have a number at this point other than it seems it would be more appropriate to be significantly higher than the 14-day threshold that's in the bill. I think, the best way to arrive at a number is to get everybody around a table and part of a discussion and figure out what an appropriate threshold would look like and how many properties that may affect. And I think that's maybe one of the pieces that we're missing. If you look at the revenue analysis, under the detail, the second bullet says the number of properties that would be newly qualify as Class 4B1 under this proposal is unknown. Again, this is going to affect some number of property taxpayers, but we just don't have a handle, I think, on how many there are, where they're located, and what effect this bill would have. So I think just 14, the feedback I'm receiving from our members is that they feel that that's very low, and we need to figure out what an appropriate number would be that's certainly somewhere higher than that. In terms of the property tax rate difference, residential homestead up to 500,000 is at a class rate of 1.0, and over 500,000 is 1.25. With seasonal recreational up to 500,000 being 1.0 and over 500,000, 1.25, but also subject to the state general tax and not subject to referendum levies.
Thank you. I had agreed too. It just seemed like a little bit too short of a time to be meaningful.
Yes, and members, maybe just pause here for a second. Mr. Swanson's on the line. If he could provide a little context in terms of how we got to that 14 days, I think that might be informative for the members. Mr. Swanson, do you have an opportunity here to kind of explain how that 14-day threshold was reached?
Mr. Chair and members, the 14-day threshold was meant to sort of mirror the Internal Revenue Code threshold for individuals reporting rental income from renting out their residences for federal tax purposes. So there is a provision that says if a person rents out their home for less than 15 days per year, they do not need to include that rental income as a part of their gross income for federal tax purposes. And that 14-day mark was just sort of meant to match up with that threshold. I also want to mention, Mr. Chair and members, that the bill summary for the DE1 amendment does have a class rates table, and it may be helpful to reference that and just compare class rates of the 4B1 classification with some other related property tax classifications.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Appreciate it. Representative Brownback, a follow-up question, or should we move on to our next question?
Thank you.
Okay. Next on my list, I have Representative McDonald. Representative McDonald, you had a question. If you could please specify who you would like to direct your question to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is to the testifier. I forgot his name already. The first testifier that testified in regard to the tourism and the importance of that for us in this industry.
Okay. I believe we still have Mr. Boyd on the phone. Jim Boyd. Yeah,
I'm here.
I think he's still available. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
So, Mr. Boyd, although it's very, very hard to predict, and it's kind of a loaded question, I'm just curious. I was talking to Senator Bach, and he was saying that folks up in the northern Minnesota, the tourism, those who have their livelihood because of tourism, are certainly needing it, looking forward to opening up. And he has said some of the residents are kind of hesitant to open it up to have people come up. So just wondering what your prediction is on how successful your tourism season will be, and if we do indeed open up the state by May 4th as opposed to the end of May, what your predictions are in the tourism in your neck of the woods.
Mr. Boyd.
Yes, my response to that would be that most experts predict that once Governor Walz relaxes the restrictions on travel, that it will be Katie bar the door, that we will be literally overrun with people so anxious to get out and enjoy the out-of-doors.
Boy, Mr. Boyd, that's great to hear. I love the optimism, and I would presume and hope to I presume you mentioned this to the governor. You sent a letter to him or contacted him with this information. The sooner we get open, the better.
Mr. Boyd?
You know, I have read a lot about the model, the Minnesota model, the IHME model. I've listened to the Minnesota Department of Health folks, and I honest to gosh don't want to get myself into a position of second-guessing those folks. They seem to know what they're doing very well. They're very qualified, and I'm really not.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. Next, I have Representative Pertas has a question. Representative Pertas, if you could let us know who you'd like to direct your question to, that would be appreciated.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can.
All right. Well, I think I want to opine about what has been said here with regard to the testifiers on the class rate and the issue of changing it from seasonal recreational to 3A. It's I want to remind everybody in the committee that seasonal recreational, does pay the state general levy, and that was a grand bargain years ago, that because they're not residents there and because it was becoming increasingly easy for local residents to pass local school option levies to put the back of that or the burden of that on the back of seasonal recreational owners who don't have children there, not in the system. And so that was many years ago, and that's been the way it's been for a long time. one of the unintended consequences of reclassifying the properties is that if you take a seasonal recreational property and now move it to 3A, it will continue to pay the state general levy, but now will also be subject to paying the local option taxes for schools as well. So there's kind of a double hit here. We go from, as Mr. Eggers had mentioned, depending on circumstances and values, but generally 1.0 to 2.0. So you have a doubling of the tax by virtue of its class rate, and then you have and will be adding additional burden of levy. And if you increase the tax rate from 1.0 to 2.0, it will also carry a heavier burden of state general levy, because at present 95% of the state general levy is on commercial and 5% of the state general levy is on seasonal recreational. So you'll have a significant increase in the state general levy on a reclassified seasonal recreational property, and you will have a doubling of the class rate. So this is quite a significant burden. And what is the end goal here? Well, we heard one of the testifiers say that we need the spaces and occupancies to accommodate the folks that want to visit northern Minnesota, that physically the resorts and the motels alone cannot handle the volume of traffic when people have tourism to northern Minnesota. So we should not be discouraging and harming the economy of northern Minnesota by taking these properties through taxation, incenting people to no longer make their properties available. So I think this is the guidance on this issue and the questions being raised. Clearly it's time for the legislature to step in and to set down some guidelines, and I would advocate that the members seriously entertain that with regard to this bill, that we make it effective for this year, 2020, and not for pay 21, because taxes are always in arrears. I realize that not all county assessors will make this change because they have some latitude, and it was just a guidance issued by the Department of Revenue. But I think it's time for the legislature to step in and clear this up. So I would support, and having explained the ramifications of the extra tax burden, and it's not just minor. I mean, the state general levy burden will go up significantly if reclassified to 3A. And so I would support the 2020 date. And I also think that we should be a little more liberal in accommodating those folks that are relying on tourism in northern Minnesota for their stores and shops to extend this 14-day limit to a longer date. And I would leave that to the committee to have further discussion about what date or how many days would be appropriate. But those are my comments, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. You raised some good points there. Mr. Swanson, do you have any information on the potential shift, and if we have any data on that, can you speak to that?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, so the DE1 amendment, so the bill as amended, would classify short-term rentals as 4B1, which is the residential non-homestead classification. So just to be clear on that, the short-term rentals under the DE1 amendment would be classified as 4B1 residential non-homestead. So residential non-homestead properties have a class rate of 1.25% and are not subject to the state general tax. They are, however, subject to referendum market value levies. So if there are short-term rentals that are currently being classified as cabins, and their classification changes to be 4B1 residential non-homestead, there would be a loss in tax base for the state, the seasonal rec portion of the state general levy. Earlier this year, the Department of Revenue sent out a survey to counties just to try to get an idea of how many short-term rental properties
there might be across the state. And I believe they got responses from nearly all of the counties. And the counties that responded identified somewhere just over 4,000 properties had the potential to be considered short-term rentals. So the number of parcels that currently pay the seasonal rent portion of the state general levy, again, this is just a portion of the state general levy that's paid by cabins and resorts, not the same portion of the levy that's paid by commercial or industrial properties. But there, the number of parcels that are subject to the seasonal rec portion of the state general levy is just over 192,000 parcels. So, even if you were to, if you made the assumption that, all of the properties of the counties in the survey are currently being classified as cabins, which they probably are not. It's likely that some have a different classification currently. Like, for example, they could be currently classified as a residential property. But just to give an idea, even if all of those properties were currently being classified as cabins, we're talking about, somewhere around a little over 2% of the parcels that are currently subject to the state general levy would be shifted out of that tax base and into the 4B1 residential non-homestead classification. So the amount of tax that actually gets shifted really depends a lot on the value of these properties and the value of the properties that are still left paying the seasonal rec portion of the tax. But just a rough estimate is somewhere around 2% of the parcels that are subject to the state general levy could no longer be subject to the state general levy under the language in the DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. I think that's very helpful to understand the contrast between the original bill and the amendment. Okay. Not seeing any additional questions from members, I'd like to give it back to Representative Eklund to provide some brief closing comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate listening to this. There's approximately 600 or so properties that this affects in Cook County, Lake County, and in District 3A. But I think it's a bigger issue across the state, so I really appreciate you, this committee, considering this and laying it over for possible inclusion going forward, because it's an issue that our auditors and assessors shouldn't have to be dealing with if they know one classification, then it'll live throughout the whole state. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, thank you, Representative. We appreciate you being with us today, as well as your testifiers. With that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 3826, as amended, be laid over. And with my virtual gavel, that bill is laid over. Thank you once again. With that, we're going to move on to our next bill. Next up, we have House File 4371. This is Representative Marquardt's bill. Representative Marquardt moves that House File 4371 be laid over. This one also has an author's amendment, the DE1. Representative Marquardt moves the DE1 amendment. Any discussion on the amendments? We can take questions now on the amendments, or if none, we can move to a roll. Give me just a second here, folks. Okay, I think we're good on the amendment. Ms. Larson, will you then please proceed with the roll on the DE1 amendment, please?
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Hertas?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Drozdkowski?
Aye.
Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Thanks for just a
Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Representative McDonald?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Runbeck?
Aye.
Representative Zhang? Representative Zhang?
Aye. Okay, great. With that, the amendment is adopted. We do have the bill before us. Representative Marquardt, would you please present your bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. First of all, before I kind of get into it, just a little background is, of course, everyone realizes that there's a lot of individuals and businesses right now going through some very difficult and uncertain times due to the COVID-19 virus. And one form of relief that could be provided to these individuals and businesses is property tax relief. And counties do have the authority to abate and or waive penalties and interest, in effect delaying when those property taxes would have to be paid. So what House File 4371 as amended does is that with first half property taxes, which are due May 15th, there's what's called a settlement date, which is May 20th, where those dollars that came into the county, to the county treasurer and then worked through the county auditor, those monies then get redistributed back to cities, school districts, townships, and other local unit of government. Well, according to state law, if that settlement date is after May 20th, then that redistribution would not occur until October or November. Actually, October is schools get 50% of their distribution in October and then the other 50% in November. So it'd be October and November they would have to wait for. So what this amendment, the DE1 amendment, would do would allow counties to distribute those first half property tax payments received after that May settlement date on another alternative date before October or November. And so, in effect, what the DE1 amendment does, it creates flexibility for counties without creating a state mandate. And what it also makes sure is that especially cities and townships and schools could get their payments as soon as possible without putting cities and other local units of government in a situation where they could not pay or wouldn't have the money to pay for important services, especially during this COVID-19 crisis. So this would apply to only first half payments. It would only apply to 2020 property taxes. So, Mr. Chair, that is the DE1 amendment, and I will take any questions.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Members, please text Nathan if you have a question. I'm going to move on to our first testifier. We do have Ms. Schroeder. Ms. Schroeder, if you're on the line, if you could please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Carlson and committee members. My name is Kelly Schroeder, and I am the Pine County Auditor Treasurer. I am presenting today on behalf of Pine County and the Association of Minnesota Counties to support the Delete All Amendment to House File 4371. In order to understand why this proposal is necessary, I'm going to first describe the current property tax settlement process to you. As members of this committee may be aware, the settlement process describes the procedures the county auditor and treasurers go through to send the property tax collections to the cities, townships, school districts, the state of Minnesota, and other taxing authorities throughout the state. It occurs three times per year, with four advances to the state and the school districts in between these settlements. This process is detailed in statutes 276.09 through 276.112 and gives counties no discretion on these payments. The first settlement annually is for property taxes that are collected January 1st through May 20th each year. These taxes must be settled to the taxing jurisdictions within 60 days of May 20th. That is, except for the schools and the state, which receive a 50% advance payment of these funds within 7 days after May 15th, and then the other 50% again within 14 days of May 15th. The second settlement annually is for property taxes that are calculated or are collected May 21st through November 20th each year. The taxes must be settled to the taxing jurisdictions within 7 days of November 15th. Again, except for the schools in the state, which receive a 50% advance payment of these funds within 7 days after October 15th, and then the other 50% again within 14 days of October 15th. The last settlement annually includes any undisbursed collections from May 21st through December 31st and is looked at as more of a cleanup settlement. This settlement must be paid by January 25th in the year following the collection. Due to COVID-19, many counties across the state, including Pine County, are considering abating the penalties for late payments of the first half property taxes, which are due on May 15th. Most counties are discussing a later date, such as July 15th or July 31st, which means these payments would not be included in the first settlement. If counties choose to proceed with this much-needed relief for their citizens and business owners, it may cause financial difficulties for the taxing jurisdictions, since they may have to wait until the second settlement in November or October for the state and the schools to receive portions of their levies that they normally would have received in July or June. Statute may already include a provision for counties to make an advance settlement to taxing jurisdictions between normal settlements, but the statute is a bit ambiguous and somewhat contradictory. Additionally, the language in the current statute requires a written notice from the taxing jurisdiction to the county, which in this case is an administrative burden to counties. For example, Pine County has 58 taxing jurisdictions, and we will want to complete an additional settlement to all 58 at once, not just the ones that we have received written notice from. It would be very time-consuming to follow up with any that have not submitted written notice. For these reasons, Pine County, as well as AMC, support this provision. Thank you, and please let me know if you have any questions.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Schroederer. Please appreciate your testimony today. Members, if you have questions, please text Nathan. We'll get you in the queue for that. Seeing no questions at this time, I do want to move on to our next testifier. Let's see here. I believe it's Ms. Cadoon. Ms. Cadoon, are you on the line? If you could introduce yourself and please proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Mr. Chair.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. This is Beth Cadoon with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, representing 6,300 businesses and more than 500,000 employees statewide. We are in support of Chair Marquardt's bill and thank him for bringing it forward today to adjust property tax distribution schedule if there's a payment extension provided. During this time of crisis, Minnesota employers have been doing all that they can to ensure the health and safety of their employees and their customers while also trying to maintain the ongoing viability of their businesses. Businesses of all sizes all across the state and virtually all industries have been negatively impacted. They've been required to shutter or have seen a tremendous drop in their revenue. This is placing a serious strain on the continuing viability of some of our employers. There was a letter sent last week to all legislators, so I hope you received it, from a broad coalition of 80 business associations and local chambers of commerce, including the Minnesota Chamber, asking for state legislators to take action to provide for property tax payment extension of the May 15th payment. This is a very large fixed cost for many businesses when they do not have income coming in to make this payment. A payment delay will help provide much-needed breathing room until businesses can be back up and running, earning income, or until loan assistance also arrives. But the reality is clear that not all businesses will receive financial assistance. These dollars have been slow in coming, and as recently reported, those federal funds are tapped out. We do appreciate the efforts by some counties that have already taken action of the payment deferral. As one county official in Winona stated when they took action to delay the payment, the counties, cities, school boards, and townships also have reserve funds. What other than right now will ever be considered an emergency? We completely agree. We urge this committee to take a broader approach and enact a proper tax payment delay at the state level. The shutdown's orders occurred at the state level, so relief, we believe, should be provided at the state level so there's uniformity across the state. Payment due dates are set by state statute, so this is completely within your purview. A uniform approach will treat all businesses equally and lessen confusion versus a patchwork account at the county level. Neil Kashikari, the president of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve, testified at a legislative hearing a few weeks ago and highlighted the importance of helping businesses now. As a dollar spent today to help them retain employees, stay in business, is better than a dollar spent later. A dollar spent now will help our state's economy get going again much faster. If businesses close, if they go bankrupt, if employees are let go, then it will take a much longer time for our state's economic recovery. Policies that you enact now to help speed Minnesota's economic recovery is important for all Minnesotans, our employers, our employees, and their families. We urge you not only to support this bill, because it does allow for the counties that flexibility, but also to look broader and bolder and take immediate action at the state level to provide for much-needed 60-day delay in the property tax payments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadena. Appreciate your testimony today. Next on my list of testifiers, I have, who do I have? Matt Mathman. Matt, are you on the line?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please proceed. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Matt Mossman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Inter-County Association. And I want to thank you, Chair Carlson, for the opportunity to testify on 4371 and Chair Markwood for authoring this legislation. MICA's member counties are sensitive to the challenges facing property taxpayers impacted by the COVID-19 response, and they're also aware of and sensitive to the reality that property tax payments are collected only twice per year in May and October, and that they are the primary revenue source for county governments and local taxing authorities. County boards have been proactive at considering whether how to use their limited authority under 279.01 to abate late payment penalties for the current taxes paid year in an effort to assist property owners affected by the COVID-19. And many have been working together to bring some amount of uniformity to whatever approach they might move forward with, all while keeping in mind the important and unique circumstances of the cash flow needs and other expectations and budget needs of the local taxing districts in their area. All the counties that I've worked with have been thoughtful in engaging the local taxing districts to understand how the delays will impact them, and counties have been anticipating and looking that they will be moving forward with making some additional distribution. And so this language in House File 4737 is very helpful in bringing some much-needed guidance and clarity to the opportunity and the need to distribute funds that are received after May 15th, should a county decide to offer broad-based delay in abatements, delay in penalties and abatement of penalties that results in lower revenues prior to May 15th. So we thank you for this legislation. We think it will be helpful in providing the guidance that counties need to make a distribution to their local taxing districts if they do move forward with a broad-based abatement. We appreciate you, Chair Marquardt, for authoring this legislation, bringing it forward, and we look forward to continuing to work with the legislature to make sure that this legislation moves forward this session. So I'd be happy to stand for any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Matt. We do appreciate your testimony. I do have one more testifier scheduled here.
Gary Carlson. Gary, are you on the line? If you can introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Gary Carlson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 4371 and the Delete All Amendment. The League generally supports the amendment for many of the reasons already outlined. From a local perspective, delays in cash flows could be very detrimental to local cities. And let me just explain briefly why that is. Keep in mind that under current law, basically, cities receive the bulk of their revenues twice a year, after the May 15th property tax payment and after the October 15th property tax payment. As Ms. Schroeder already outlined, those distributions occur in essentially in June and late November for cities. So for cities right now, the last distribution of property tax receipts, the last major distribution, I should say, occurred last November. So cities have been living, cities and counties and other local taxing jurisdictions have been using the monies they received actually last November for much of the operations that have occurred in the first 6 months of this year. And therefore, delaying the payment that would occur this June could be very detrimental for many cash flow purposes for cities. Let me just say that keep in mind that the property tax system has a lot of intricacies, as you all know. Many of you have served on city councils and county boards, and you're well aware that there's many dependencies upon the distribution of the property tax payments. Probably the most important one that comes up very shortly here will be the debt service requirements that we structure many municipal bonds around, and generally those debt service payments have debt service that comes due in August and in February, just months after the collection and distribution of the property tax payments. So a significant delay in the property tax receipts, either because of the economy or because of county board action, or even if we were to undertake something along the lines of Ms. Cadoon's suggestion of a delay statewide, could have very serious ramifications for the ability of cities to not only pay the salaries, but also to make debt service payments for the bonds that they have issued. So with that, I will just say that without this bill, we could still file for, in written form, an early distribution of any tax receipts that come in after the May 15th distribution, the late June distribution. But as Ms. Schroeder outlined, that would require, for some jurisdictions, just many, many requests, lots of paperwork for all of the cities, counties, schools, townships, and other taxing jurisdictions. So we believe that the construct of Representative Marquardt's bill and his amendment would make this a more streamlined process for the time being. And then finally, I'll just say that I know this only affects the May distributions, but we may be in a situation come November to have to decide more about how we handle the property tax distributions in the future. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. We do appreciate it. Members, just real quick here, a couple housekeeping things. I have Representative McDonald has a question for Mr. Carlson. We'll get to that in just a second. Representative Hertas, after that, has some questions, I think, after all the testifiers. Mr. Carlson is our last testifier, sir. Representative Hertas, we'll get to you after Representative McDonald. What I do want to do, though, is, and I apologize for the technical difficulty. Ms. Schroeder, I'm hoping you're still on the line. Apparently, we lost about the first minute and a half of your testimony. If you could please summarize your testimony for us, especially the first half. You made some really important points there, and I just want to make sure that those are part of the record. So if we could backtrack just a little bit and allow Ms. Schroeder to summarize her testimony for us, and then we'll get to member questions. Thank you.
Sure, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to do that. Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I was unmuted. Thank you. So the first portion of my testimony included just an outline of the current property tax settlement process as it is today, which is under state statute, and does really give counties no direction at all or no discretion at all on these payments. So given the fact that there's the consideration of allowing later payments with the first half taxes, they would not, those taxes paid after May 15th would not be included in the settlements. So there's three settlements each year, with four advanced settlements to the schools and the state of Minnesota in between those regular three settlements. And the first settlement is for taxes from January 1st through May 20th each year, and those are settled to the taxing jurisdictions within 60 days of May 20th, except for the schools in the state, which receive some of those funds earlier in the end of May and early June. The second settlement occurs is based on the taxes from May 21st through November 20th each year, and those are settled to the taxing jurisdictions within 7 days of November 15th, except for the schools in the state, which receive, again, those advanced settlements in late October. Is there anything else that was missed?
I'm not sure for sure how much, but I think that that was very helpful. I think it was just very important that even to have the refresher, I think was important to get an understanding in terms of the timeline with the date. So thank you. First on my list is Representative McDonald. I believe you had a question for Mr. Carlson, if you want to proceed with your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Mr. Carlson, and actually Representative Marquardt as well. Just Mr. Carlson, being a former mayor as well, and many of us on council, we certainly understand the necessity for those payments. But what do you propose for some of the businesses that have been shut down that simply don't have the funds? Would you be in support of, part of this bill that would address that?
Mr. Carlson, do you want to go first, or Representative Marquardt? I'm not sure who that's directed towards.
Mr. Carlson first, and a question for Representative Marquardt.
Got it. Okay. Mr. Carlson.
Representative McDonald, this is Gary Carlson again with the League of Minnesota Cities. So you're asking what we would propose to do to help businesses that are struggling right now? That's a super question.
Correct. That maybe simply don't have the money to pay their first portion of the property tax.
I know that there are a lot of programs as well at the federal level. I'm not trying to deflect the question here, but we have trying to understand the implications of the CARES Act. The Federal CARES Act did provide some additional assistance for businesses, and we also recognize that they are very close to a passage of a second or a 3.5 version of that bill to continue and expand the business assistance. Unfortunately, local units of government don't generally have a lot of reserve or even a to help businesses out the challenge. I do know a few cities looking very carefully at loans that could be made from their Economic Development Authority to help out with business challenges that are occurring. However, those are very dependent upon local, local their Economic Development Authority. But we certainly appreciate the fact that this is a hard time for businesses, for homeowners, for everyone. Unfortunately, the unique nature of the property tax system means that, the reserves that cities have been living on for the last basically 5 or 6 months are really the end of the line for cities as well. So certainly would encourage business to take advantage of the federal monies that are coming in and make sure that employees on the payroll as well.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Rumbeck, I'm sorry, Representative McDonald, did you have a follow-up question?
Yes, thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Carlson. Yeah, I accept that answer, and certainly that will help businesses. One thing Delano did is they did apply for a deed grant some time ago and got it. It was $100,000. So they are offering loans up to $2,500 for businesses for the utilities specifically. So I know that's what some cities are doing, at least in my city of Delano, helping out fellow businessmen and women with the utilities and loans to their deed grant. But Representative Marquardt, quick question for you. I support the bill, being a property owner and a local business on Main Street.
I know our we have taxes due come May 15th, and we have the money right now, but by May 15th, it might be a little tight. But would this bill, if this should pass, does it require on all properties or just those that have been affected by the shutdowns? So of course, your big boxes, stores, and many others that are thriving and doing well during this time, they wouldn't need that. Is that what you're proposing in the bill, Representative Markworth?
Representative Markworth. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. Yeah, this would apply for all properties. Yeah, this doesn't differentiate between any properties. I don't know if counties would have the authority to say, oh, we're just going to, you know, abate penalties for businesses impacted by the executive orders. I don't know if they have that specific ability. I think they may. They could probably take things on a one-on-one basis, too. But this would just allow the county's flexibility, and right now covers all properties. And then you mentioned the city of Delano, the city of Dilworth, where I live, they're also using a revolving loan fund that they have to help businesses in need right now.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, good to hear. So really, it's up to the counties and even the businesses. If your big boxes don't need that abatement, then certainly they should be paying it by the first due date. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, yes. I mean, this doesn't preclude anyone from paying their property taxes should a county extend penalties out to June 15th or July 15th. This does not prevent any business or individual from paying taxes prior to that date.
Good. Okay. Next member on my list for questions, I have Representative Runbeck, then Representative Hertas, I think, is going to close us out. Representative Runbeck, if you could let us know who you're directing your question to and then proceed with your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this goes to staff. It's kind of a more a bigger question about the city reserves. And just to, this is the second recession in, you know, a little more than 10 years. And I'm just wondering if there is anything in statute now that directs cities on usage of their reserve funds, what is an optimal drawdown, that kind of thing. And then secondly, I wondered if we could get the real-time figures, you know, the, let's say, May 1st figures for the size of city reserves at this point. It would be,
okay.
I think, you know, it's something we shouldn't be overlooking.
Sure. I'm wondering, Gary Carlson, if you're still on the line, is that something that you have some insights on before we go to staff from the league's perspective? Is that something that you would be able to address at this time? Do you have some information from your members?
Chair Carlson, the latest information we have on city fund balances that's compiled for all cities statewide would be in the state auditor's report that documents finances, revenues and expenditures and finances for the calendar year 2018. They have not yet completed the 2019 calendar year report. So I do want to just warn that fund balances for cities are and counties are measured on December 31st. And again, that is a high watermark in the, so to speak, in a city's financial year. It occurs shortly after, or it's measured shortly after we receive our property tax distributions from counties. And for those cities that get local government aid, it also includes the second LGA payment. That also is paid twice a year, just like the property tax. So I just urge a lot of caution in looking at the fund balances of cities and counties on December 31st as if it's a rainy day fund like the state's rainy day fund. It's more like a cash flow account that is necessary to basically bridge cities and counties from, you know, basically January 1st until the first distribution of property taxes. That said, I should just point out that if you look at the state auditor's report, you'll notice that our smaller cities tend to run the higher fund balances just on average. And I think the state auditor generally notes this in the report that's released every year. Larger cities tend to carry relatively small percentage of unrestricted fund balance
It's kind of the nature that the smaller cities are more reliant on the property tax and state aids, and they just carry naturally a higher fund balance, on December 31st. But we could try to survey people. I don't know if cities could easily pull a May 31st or April 30th fund balance number that would be comparable to what the auditor produces in the annual report, but I could talk to some finance officers and check into the possibility. But collecting that for 853 cities would be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I would agree that would be difficult for the cities in which to do. Representative Brumback, any follow-up question?
No follow-up question, Mr. Chair. I just feel that, everyone in the state, every individual, every business is going to be impacted. And, if there is a way, that we can look to, funds that are available, I think we ought to do that at the municipality level, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Last question, we have Representative Hertas. If you want to let us know who you want to direct your question towards, and then please proceed with your question.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. And really, I wanted to make more of a closing comment about this whole subject than a direct question. I want to thank Ms. Schroeder and Mr. Carlson, Ms. Cadoon, for their testimony on this subject. And most importantly, Chair Marquardt, I appreciate what you're bringing forward. I want to remind everybody, and there's been some cloud and confusion and some words and terms used about deferring the May 15th payment. This bill does not do that. It simply addresses how payments received after the due date, which is only set in statute by the state of Minnesota, not by counties, is distributed. Now, the reason and motivation, and I'm making some presumptions here on part of Chair Marquardt, but I think there's generally a presumption that businesses in particular are in trouble and that there may be a higher incidence of late payments made on this first half taxes. So I did hear Mr. Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities make some reference about the dire consequences. Again, this is not addressing or suggesting that everybody is going to be paying their property taxes late. In fact, as of this moment, the due date is still May 15th. There's no relief for anybody or any class of property with regard to the due date. What's important to also note is that of the 55-plus classifications of property that we have in this state, not all of them have been adversely affected with regard to the current situation and COVID-19. What is, and everyone is aware, that businesses are certainly asking for relief, as represented by Ms. Cadoon in her testimony as well. But I think what I want to point out here is that it would be a very dire consequence if counties in advance of May 15th took an official policy that they're going to abate penalty and interest in advance of the due date. Any counties that do that and act accordingly are inviting all classes of property taxes that are due to pay late. I don't think that is the intent. The intent is to offer and provide relief for those who are really being left out of the safety nets that have, by and large, been offered and provided through unemployment compensation, the CARES Act, and additional unemployment compensation funding, as well as other monies that were made available, which were immediately exhausted within regard to the business community. So we know a lot of businesses have not been closed, Chair Carlson. The Walmarts, the Menards, the box stores, Targets, you name them, a lot of them are actually doing better in these times. And so this bill and is really a good backup precursor for a bill that will be introduced this week that addresses some specific relief where the state statutorily can move the due date
60 days to July 15th, and the bill that I am offering on that is very narrow in that it is only for Class 3A properties, no other properties. The 3A are the business properties, and it further does not permit late payment for those businesses that were not closed or shuttered as a result of the executive orders. So this is a good complement of what I hope we can still get done before the May 15th deadline. And I think I'll close with that. The last thing, as Representative McDonald did mention, many of us have served on councils. Chair Carlson, you have. Representative Marcourt was a mayor. I was a mayor. McDonald was a mayor. There may be a few others on the committee that have served as well. And in this, it's true that we do get these two lump sum payments, but then there is also fee revenue that occurs within the cities and enterprise funds that occur within the cities. And many of the cities get a significant part of their annual revenues from local government aid. I wish I could claim that my communities do, but they do not. But nonetheless, there are communities throughout the state that receive as much as 50% of their total operating budget from local government aid, typically lower than that, but there are some extreme situations. So I do believe that the budget reserves are adequate, and this is not talking about or suggesting that property taxes are going to be delayed. And if counties would announce their decision and discretion about penalties and interest after May 15th, that would be a most appropriate time to do that. But up until then, everyone should be encouraged, and especially those not affected, to pay their property taxes on time. And that will mean that I'm guessing that 85 to 90% of all the property tax receipts due May 15th will probably come in on time. Thank you, Chair Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Representative Hertas. I do want to allow Representative Marcourt an opportunity to make some closing comments. But just before we, as elected officials, we're all hearing from our cities and counties in the past couple of weeks, and it's just striking to me the differences, you know, based on the makeup of their individual economies, how they are all experiencing this crisis. So, allowing for a degree of flexibility in these times of uncertainty seems to be a prudent approach. Representative Marcourt, if you want to provide some closing comments.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the testifiers and also the comments from members, which is very, very good and thoughtful. And this is, you know, certainly, as we know, you know, businesses and individuals are, a lot of them, are in some very difficult times, and property tax extension, at least with help with cash flow and give them some time to get things put together. And so what the DE1 amendment does, again, is basically give counties this flexibility so that if they decide to extend the date of abating penalties and that type of thing, which in effect is, you know, delaying when property taxes would have to be paid, that they can get those dollars out to cities and schools and townships at a timely basis so that these local units of government can keep their cash flow going as best they can, because they are also providing very important services. Might be personal protection equipment, might be overtime for law enforcement. Whatever that might be, it's allowing our local units of government to do what they need to do in times of this COVID-19 fight. But also a real strength, probably in state law generally, as we look at this property tax situation, is that counties, they have local control and they control the actions they do. So each county can set their own policy regarding how they would do this, dealing with property taxes and those affected. So I think this allows that flexibility for counties to do their jobs and allow as much flexibility as they make their own policies and actions in dealing with providing some sort of relief for individuals and businesses. So, members, appreciate your support on this and appreciate the discussion.
Well, thank you, Representative Marquardt. With that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 4371, as amended, be laid over. And with that, the bill is laid over. Members, that finishes our agenda for today. Thank you for your work today. And with that, we are adjourned.